All right, welcome back in, everybody. IHOP Hotline back open for you, where you can celebrate the new IHOP House faves, all your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Max Power in for Jad this week. Glad to be here with you on a Reaction Monday. All across the land, we have Reaction Mondays. And I think most headlines today, at least that I've seen, surround how bad the Cowboys looked against the Lions. Of course, that's how, you know, those things work. I want to pay attention more to the Lions on that side of it and how impressive they looked. They're multifaceted. Devastating that they lose, you know, what's been probably the league's top defensive player this year for what looks like the year. I don't know how that reacts. So if we were going to do, you know, power rankings and all of those things, I think the two teams, there's a handful that you got to pay attention to. The Lions are certainly one of them. And remember, the Vikings and the Chiefs did not play. But you had the Lions, the Texans, the Ravens, and the Packers all have really impressive wins considering who they were playing. I think the Lions are the biggest statement in a wide open NFC. If Hutchinson had not got hurt, Tommy, I would tell you they're my favorite in the NFC right now. But with his injury, I'm not so sure about that. We'll see how they react to that. The Ravens are the team everybody keeps talking about. I'm not there yet with them. I'm not. The Chiefs beat them. I'm not sure that I would take them over the Texans right now, but they're the team everybody wants to talk about at the moment because Lamar Jackson has been very good, and I get that. But I'm not ready to crown the Ravens. They have two losses this year.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Ravens a lot. I'm high on the Ravens. I think that they're the most likely team outside of the Chiefs to represent the conference in the Super Bowl. I mean, I put them above the Texans, and I love the Texans, and I love what they've done this season, but for me, it's less about Lamar Jackson and more about Derrick Henry. I mean, Henry has had just a resurgence in his career coming to Baltimore, and credit to that offense for finding really, really creative and effective ways to utilize Henry in the running game and have him alongside Lamar Jackson to where it's not taking anything away from what Jackson is doing, but it really is able to kind of complement both of them. I think that part of it with the Ravens, for me, the only sort of thing that I would kind of look at, not even really as a concern, but something that is coming along a little slower, I think, than I would have thought, is just the receivers. And they don't have, you know, they've obviously got Zay Flowers and they've got Bateman, they've got a couple other guys, but it really, it's that hasn't been the premier part of their offense. And Mark Andrews hasn't had a great start to the season. It's been the other tight ends that they've got. Isaiah Likely, you know, is kind of a boom or bust type tight end that they've got. So that's really the one thing that I think will continue to come along. And it's been a little bit slow going to start off the season. But all in all, I really like the Ravens a lot. And defensively, they look a lot better than they have in years past.
Yeah, they're going to have to get better defensively, I would say. And that's the reason I would still say, give me the Chiefs in the postseason. I think this is their most talented group of pass catchers in the Lamar Jackson era. Now, whether they're living up to it or not, I mean, on paper,
I think
it's as good a group as they've ever had with Lamar. I think it's more about the Texans for me. I still have the Texans ahead of them. CJ Stroud, I mean, he's incredible. I don't know what else to say. Like for a guy who I didn't have low expectations for Stroud coming in out of Ohio State. I had no expectations. I didn't know what to make of him as a quarterback prospect, and he is awesome. And they lost Nico Collins, who has been everything to them, and Stroud just dimes, man. He just throws dimes.
But so they've got a deep receiver room. I mean, it helps when you add Steph Diggs in the offseason. And, you know, with the absence of Nico Collins yesterday, Tank Dell stepped up and had a big game also. So they've got some guys there that are, you know, further down the depth chart that have been effective and that are able to come in. And who knows how long Nico Collins is going to be out. I know they put him on IR, so a minimum of 4 weeks. So I don't know if that's just, you know, 4 week and he's back type thing, or if it's something that can linger longer. But in his absence, I mean, I think they feel pretty confident about who they've got to step up in that depth chart. And even running the football, it's kind of been a next man up philosophy for the Texans also. I mean, yesterday it was Damian Pierce, who really hadn't done much this season at all. Cam Akers the week before did quite, like, it just is a different guy each week. But the one constant, or the main constant at least, has been CJ Stroud.
It's good. On the other side in the NFC, the Packers, I think, didn't get enough love yesterday. And I say love on purpose, pun intended. Jordan Love is back and looking really good for them. I think with him healthy and their talented receiver room is getting healthier, Tommy, I would tell you that I probably feel like three of the four best teams in the NFC reside in that division. Like the Vikings, the Lions, and the Packers. 49ers would be the other team, but I think three of them are in that division, and I think the Bears are good. That's turned out to be the best division in football. I also think they're for real. That was a good matchup for Love and their style of football against Arizona, but they look really good. So statements all around as the two unbeaten teams sit there and wait and remain unbeaten. The Vikings probably get Hockenson back this week, maybe, or close to it. I want to say he's within a couple of weeks either way. Chiefs aren't going to get that much healthier anytime soon, but did any team step up to threaten those two in your mind over the weekend as the top teams in their respective conferences?
I mean, like I told you at the top of the show, I like Tampa Bay a lot. I really like what they've been able to do offensively. And it's so interesting to me that as soon as Baker Mayfield came in, despite the weapons around him with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Rashad White running the football and all of that, there was so much skepticism because of Baker, because Baker hadn't really been able to make it work in the NFL. This was, I think, sort of viewed as kind of the last frontier for Baker Mayfield, where expectations weren't particularly high, even with the guys around him, and he's responded. I mean, he looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and he did a year ago too. But he definitely has this season. Remember, the Bucs made the playoffs a season ago, albeit in a really weak NFC South. That division is better this year. The Falcons are better. The Saints look like they're better, although their record doesn't really indicate it. They're kind of on a skid right now, but you know, Derek Carr is injured. I think that's going to be dependent on how long he's out. And then the Panthers are the Panthers. But that division as a whole is better than it was a season ago. And what the Bucs have been able to do is sort of make statement after statement this season. And sure, are the top teams in that conference head and shoulders better than the Bucs? I wouldn't say head and shoulders. They're better, but I wouldn't say that they're head and shoulders. I think that gap has narrowed quite a bit.
Yeah, I do too. I think both conferences honestly are a jumbled mess, and injuries have been, you know, a big part of that. Been a big part of that for the Niners. Been a big part of that for the Chiefs. Could you imagine if the Chiefs were healthy right now? Could you imagine if they had their, you know, what we came into the year as three of their top four offensive weapons being down? So I would say nobody's threatening the Chiefs right now. The Chiefs are going to play a lot of close games this year. But if you're telling me, like, when you get to the, it's not all that different for different reasons, but not all that different than what we said last year. They're going to be able to run the ball, and they're going to play great defense, and they're going to have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. So all of those things still exist for me with the Chiefs, and you know, but that doesn't mean I think they're going to win every game they play this year. They won't. They'll play a lot of close games, but they're still going to be there in the end. The Vikings are really interesting to me. They go into this bye week. It's been a near perfect start for them. They've overcome some injuries of their own. They don't even have maybe their second best offensive weapon here in TJ Hockenson. And here's Sam Darnold, who historically has been able to put short stretches like this together. Can he do it for real though now? And I would say he's certainly never been in a better position to. That's a very obvious statement because he's, you know, he's got Justin Jefferson on his team, but he's about to have Jefferson and Addison and Aaron Jones. And he's got a coach that's a quarterback guy in Kevin O'Connell. I think the Vikings are for real, and their defense is pretty good. Flores may be the best in the business at this particular moment as a coordinator on the defensive side of the ball. It's going to be a fun, wild, wacky year. Continue to be so, Tommy, in the NFL. I would say this, with all everything we just talked about, I absolutely think there are more contenders for a Super Bowl than we thought there would be going into the year. And it feels like there are more than I can remember. But all these teams we're listing, could you tell me definitively that they could not make a run to a Super Bowl?
Not definitively, no. I mean, I think that at least through the first, what are we just shy of halfway through the season, a couple games shy of that, the first third of the NFL season, the parity is there. It's jammed up. You know, we really haven't seen that one team really, and I don't even include the Chiefs or the Vikings in this, completely raise their hand and say that, you know, yeah, we are significantly better than every other team in the NFL. You know, of course, the Chiefs and the Vikings, their records are going to say that for sure.
Yeah.
But there are deficiencies on both of those teams. Every team has them, right? There's not a perfect team in the NFL. As far as the Vikings are concerned, going back to what you had mentioned just a moment ago, it's going to be really, really interesting this weekend to watch Detroit travel to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. Like that, I'm so excited about that matchup because keep in mind, obviously the Vikings had this week off, this last week off. The game before that, when they played the Jets, that was Sam Darnold's first bad game. Like, he didn't play great. You know, he threw for under 200 yards and he had an interception, no touchdowns thrown. That was the first sort of wrinkle that we had seen in Sam Darnold this season. I think most people thought that there would be a lot more of those, you know, because he's just a placeholder, right? And so it was almost kind of like he came back down to earth. What I'm going to be really, and I know that the Lions lost Aiden Hutchinson. He is out for the year. That's been confirmed this morning. I know they lost Hutchinson. I'm interested to see if Darnold can bounce back from what happened against the Jets last week and, you know, show that that's just a one-time anomaly and that overall this offense led by Darnold is going to have a lot of success, or if Detroit's defense will be able to limit him for a second game in a row. And then in that case, it's kind of becoming a trend and something to keep our eyes on about the Vikings moving forward.
Yeah, I think probably not. But Darnold's got his own trends to buck, and it's been his MO. He's good for a short spurt, and then he gets not good real quick. We'll see. Now's going to be the time for that. But if I just gave you a list real quick of teams that, you know, have a reasonable chance to reach the postseason, the postseason, right? You tell me if you think they have no chance to actually win the Super Bowl. Buffalo.
I would say yes.
You would say they have no chance?
No, I would say they have a chance, yes.
Yeah, they have a chance to win, so I agree. The other teams in that division are a little tricky. If the Jets survive the landmine of their coach, I think you could still see a path for them. The Dolphins, I think, are hard to even bring up until we see Tua come back on the field, so I'll exclude them for now. Baltimore, of course they have a chance. Yeah. What about Pittsburgh?
I'm going to say no.
I'm
going to say no. I think that they could reasonably be a playoff team, maybe one of the final seeds in. I don't see them making a run to the Super Bowl.
I actually could, in a one-game scenario, see them beating anybody. I'd say it's very unlikely, but I wouldn't close the door completely. And I would like to see Russell Wilson fit in the offense to just see what it looks like. Cincinnati, I know they're 2-4, but no. Until otherwise, I'm going to say. But if they can get there, any chance for you?
No,
I would reluctantly disagree with that for now. Houston, of course, we think has a chance. What about Indianapolis?
Yes, I mean I think yes, but it's going to be dependent on the health of Richardson and Taylor.
They'd be a no for me. I think Flacco makes him better than Richardson at this moment. That's not an indictment on Richardson yet, but Flacco makes him better. Flacco's been incredible, but I would give them a no. They'd be a no for me. The Chiefs, obviously. What about the Chargers?
Yeah, I can see the Chargers.
I could too. I think their style of football could get them there. Washington is really interesting. Washington could make the playoffs, but could you see them making a run to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think I could. I mean, Jaden Daniels, I think, continues to light things up and show that he definitely is worthy of being the starting quarterback there. So, yeah, and he's got, I mean, these great weapons that have never had a great quarterback for them, like Terry McLaurin. I could see that.
I'm a very hesitant, yes, because I think their defense isn't very good, but I know who their head coach is and expect it to get better over the course of the season. That's a reluctant yes for me. I don't think we're going to agree on this one. Philadelphia, I would say absolutely if they can get there, they would have a chance.
Yeah, if they can get there, they would have a chance. I mean, and it just solely is based on the talent that they have on the field.
There's just too much talent.
They're loaded. I don't trust them. I don't trust them, but the talent is there.
Dallas is a hell no for me. Absolutely.
I thought
we were
listing teams that reasonably had a chance to make the playoffs.
No, I'm listing teams. Yeah, there you go. That have a chance. They're 3-3. I mean, so technically speaking, they'll have a chance. But no, they're not doing anything, even if they get there. Minnesota. I'll say Minnesota. You think they got a chance if they can get there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I do too. Detroit, yes, for me. Here, this division's really interesting. Technically speaking, Chicago has better point differential, so we'll say Chicago first. If Chicago could get to the postseason, do you think they would have a chance in the NFC?
No, not this year.
I would say yes, and I'll use the example of the Texans last year as a reason why I think they could. I think if Caleb Williams continues to grow like he has through the first six games of the season, their defense is going to be good enough, and they have a lot of talent. What about Green Bay?
Yeah, I can see Green Bay making it.
Yeah, I could too. Atlanta, I'm a yes on Atlanta. Yep. I'm a yes on Tampa.
Yep.
Yet where everyone's going to be a yes on San Francisco, and the other one right now at 500 or better, Seattle.
I'm not in on Seattle. I think that they, I mean, take a look at that division. I think that Seattle had the best opportunity to take advantage of all the injuries that San Francisco has had, and they weren't able to do it. They haven't been able to do it. I thought Seattle could beat the Niners just because, I mean, of course, like, look at who the Niners have been missing. You're without Christian McCaffrey and all of that. And I thought that was the prime opportunity for Seattle to take that mantle, and they weren't able to do it.
Their defense kind of sucks too. They do have a defensive minded coach. So maybe for the same reason, you know, I could believe in Washington, I could give them a shot, but I would say no. The only other team at 500 better, I forgot to mention Denver. Of course not. No. No chance. So it's more jumbled, I think, than we thought. There, before we came into this season, I would have given you probably four out of the AFC: Buffalo, Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Kansas City and Houston. I guess it would have been five. But in the NFC, I would have said like San Francisco and Philadelphia, and that's it. So it's been top to bottom closer, I think. And it's been a bad injury year. It always is. And you know, we're only in week six, and a lot of things will change before now and then. But was another fun weekend of the NFL. Did you make any money this weekend?
No, but I had a really good fantasy weekend, and that continues. Dude. Yeah.
Bengals completed some bets, which is a sweat. I didn't think they were going to get it. I was like, why do I keep wasting my money on the Bengals? They have screwed me more than any team this year, but they got it done yesterday. All right.
You're a Bengals believer. I mean, they could be 1-9 this year or 2-9, and you'd be like, I'm a Bengals believer. They're going to get it done.
I know, because I love Burrow and Chase and Higgins. Their defense is much worse than I thought it would be. I think that's a problem. And I had no idea until last night how bad their offensive line looks. Their offensive line looks terrible, terrible. And that's not going to let them do anything either. I mean, I like Chase Brown. I like Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. Yoshivas looks pretty good. Like, you like the things that you see, and then it's like, what is going on? Well, last night it was pretty clear what was going on. Joe Burrow was just under absolute fire, and their defense sucks. So we'll see about them. I don't know. They did cover last night, and I need to just ignore their games from now until the end of time, from a betting standpoint. We'll just put it that way. We'll come back. Let's talk a little college football. Interesting weekend. Texas, Oregon, both claims at the top spot. I think Kansas State, we need to get more into their schedule. BYU's going to climb into the top 10 today, I assume. Has that poll come out? I'll look for that. It's usually
came
around
out yesterday.
10 o'clock. Oh, that's right. It comes out. The AP comes out that night. So we'll take a look at the new poll. How many of those teams are actual contenders as well? It's all coming for you on Sports Daily as we roll through hour number two.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you here each and every morning, 9 to 11, and all the different places that you can listen to the program. By the way, you can win some HTO with us right now. More than 25 flavors of iced tea to choose from, sweet or unsweet. You can also get your hands on some iced or hot coffee. By the way, it's buy one, get one 50% off on coffee drinks from 8 to 10. That's through Thursday of this week. All you got to do to win, though, is text the keyword tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357. That's tea to 20357 to get your hands on one coupon for a tea, for a coffee. On us here at Sports Daily, you can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. We come back here, Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Max Power producing for us. And we look at college football from a wider perspective. I would have kept Texas at the top still, Tommy, I think. Look, all they can do is what they're supposed to do, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do. When we picked those games on Friday, I'll be fully transparent. I had no idea the injuries that Oklahoma was dealing with coming into that game. Not only were they down to a true freshman quarterback, they were down, according to the broadcast, their top five wide receivers. They were starting with their sixth guy on the depth chart. And they had no chance. I didn't realize that, or I would have never taken the points in that game. But Texas did what it was supposed to do in that situation. So I would have left them one. Oregon gets the big win over Will Howard, and he's taking some heat this week, which kind of sucks at Ohio State. But Oregon is there at two. No problem there. And then it gets a little messy, you know, I think for the rest of it, Tommy. Alabama stays in at seven, which I thought was kind of interesting that they didn't fall. They probably should have. Iowa State moves up a couple of spots. They're now inside the top 10. A lot of people thought BYU might move inside the top 10. They did not. They stay at 13. They only moved up a place. Kansas State moves up a place to 17. And then that's it for the Big 12. No Texas Tech, which also surprises me a little bit. But, you know, it's been a pretty interesting year for college football. And I would bet you that if we asked a lot of people going into, what are we in now of the college football season, week six? If you asked a lot of people going into week six who the top three teams are, you would have had exactly zero people say Texas, Oregon, and Penn State.
Texas is great. I mean, I think that Texas is
totally great.
I think they're the best team in the country. And yeah, Oklahoma is depleted. There's no doubt about that. But I think by talking about that, you end up taking credit away from Texas, and they deserve all the credit. Like, their defense is spectacular and just did a phenomenal job. And really, yeah, the offense put up 34 against OU, but I think it was, you know, that wasn't the highlight of what the Longhorns were able to do. They were absolutely smothering defensively in that game. I want to go back to something that you said about the Oregon and Ohio State game. Why does it kind of suck that Will Howard is taking some heat? You said that kind of sucks.
Will Howard.
Like Will Howard.
Will Howard.
I mean, Will Howard, he absolutely deserves the heat. I mean, in that moment.
No, that's not what I mean. I just mean it sucks that he had a moment like that. I want Will Howard to be insanely successful. That's all I mean. Like, I root for his successes. I don't like Ohio State at all, but I do want Will Howard to be great. Will Howard is, to me, he is the poster child for all the changes in college football happening for all the right reasons and being a good thing. He's a guy who was about to be pushed out, right? He was not going to be the starter for K-State this year. There was no chance. Yet, he gets an opportunity as a guy who, you know, bled, sweat, did everything right for K-State, A, to go have a chance to let football earn him a living for a short period of time. I don't know if he's an NFL guy. At one point, I thought he could be and would be, but I don't know about that anymore. And he gets a chance to go play at that level. I think that's everything right with all the changes that have come in college football. He did everything for K-State the right way. I root for Will Howard. That's what I mean. Like, I was, you know, it's hard for me because I really don't like Ohio State, but I would like for him to have a taste of this. If, you know, if it's not going to be a team that we follow, and there would be fun for me to root for Will Howard a little bit, I guess.
Well, he's getting a taste of, you know, what it's like to not deliver when he needed to deliver the most for his team. And that comes down to clock management, you know, all of that with a quarterback that's been around for a long time. Like, he should know better than that in that moment. You know, so a mental mistake down the stretch for Howard, and something that, you know, I would imagine, and I don't know because I'm not, you know, in Ohio, but I would imagine the backlash towards the Ohio State quarterback, regardless if it's Will Howard or somebody else, is going to probably be louder and more intense than anything like that happening in Manhattan. So that's something that, I guess, if he's going to experience the highs and being able to go play for a program like Ohio State, earn money, all of that, That comes along with it, you know, that expectation to deliver in the crucial moment. And Howard wasn't able to do that. And so I would imagine that that's probably tougher to have happen when you're playing for Ohio State.
I'm trying to figure out, like, what was in his head.
I don't know.
At that moment. I don't know if he had time to look up, if he thought he would have one more second on
and
the
clock. It's that. I mean, it's the last play where he slid and the time ran out. But it was also a couple of plays prior when he didn't realize, and I don't think really anybody on the Ohio State offense realized, that the clock started when the referee, you know, signaled for it to start, and they let a lot of time be ticked off the clock there. I think it was like at 30 seconds, and it went all the way down to just over 10, I think. That was rough. There were some pretty egregious clock management situations there for Ohio State, not just Will Howard. I mean, you know, Ryan Day's got to be, you know, on the hook for that as well a little
100%.
Bit. But that was a bad showing at the very end of, and that's a game that was absolutely winnable for Ohio State.
If they make the kick, they still got to make the kick. It's college football. And look, they only have really, that was an impressive performance by them just in general, you know, on the road at Oregon. They beat Iowa pretty handily. They haven't been tested a ton this year. And I'm not, you know, other than Michigan, it's not even really a test this year. They're probably going to get in to the playoffs. So it's not the end of the world. He's had three games this year where he's completed more than 80% of his passes. He's been good. He's been really good for Ohio State thus far, but I do root for his success. So I just hated that it came down to that spot for that guy. If it was, you know, trying to think of it, but if it was somebody else on the team that made a bad, then I would be like, haha, sucks to be you. But I don't want it to be for Will Howard. I really do root for him. I like Will Howard. I want him to be successful, and I'm glad he's got this opportunity. And that comes with the challenges that he just, you know, walked into. That's a tough spot. Now, there's not really, you know, for the Big 12 to Iowa State only to be up there at 9. Otherwise, it's all representative. The only other team that's not SEC or Big 10 is Miami. That's the world we live in. You know, get used to it. We don't know what's going to shake out yet in a ranking. So I don't know. It's too early probably to start looking at CFP stuff, but I don't think it's too early to just notice that sort of thing, right? Everybody in there except one team. You've got the ACC gets to have a team in the top 10, and the Big 12 gets to have a team in the top 10, and then everybody else is dominated by those other two leagues. I guess Clemson is at 10, but they're, you know, both Miami and Clemson aren't going to be there at the end of the year. Is this the reality you think that we will be in, at least in the short term, that it'll kind of be one ACC, one Big 12, and everybody else will be those other two leagues? That I feel like it's a precursor to what's coming in the CFP.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you've got these teams that are all, you know, clearly jockeying for position right now. And I think that really in the top, you mentioned a few minutes ago, the teams that are in the top three that at the beginning of the season, you know, nobody would have necessarily predicted. And yeah, I mean, I think that that's right to an extent, but the three teams that are there,
they would have been three teams in the CFP.
They would have been three teams in the CFP. So while there are, while definitely there are shakeups from top to bottom, I don't know if there are a lot of teams. I guess maybe BYU might be the team that nobody had on the radar at all that all of a sudden are now in that top 12.
And look, I'm not like taking offense to it. What do you think would happen if BYU played Texas right now? You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
So I don't think it's unfair by any means. I just think it is, we're seeing it now, what we probably, most of us, if we were being real with ourselves, assume is how CFP rankings are going to go. Are there going to be times where the Big 12 could get two teams in? It's going to be tough. It will take, I mean, not with more than one loss. I'll say that. I can't imagine two teams getting in from, and the ACC is the same thing. If they have two losses, it'll have to be an unbeaten team and a one loss team or two one loss teams. That's the only way it can happen. And then you're going to have teams like Boise, who are going to, you know, to earn their spot in most likely. Can Notre Dame get back in? Like it's probably going to go exactly the way we thought it would go. It just is. And I guess I'm okay with it, because I don't think, like, I don't have a problem with any of these rankings. I would have liked to see BYU go into the top 10. Do I really think BYU is a top 10 team in the country? I don't. And I hope I'm wrong about that. I think it's a great story, but it is just reality. And I think it's reflective, and I think it's probably right.
I think it is. And, it's interesting because from day one, especially knowing the layout of the Big 12, I never really had this strong sense that at least this season we were going to see a strong representation from the Big 12 in the CFP. Really, in my mind, it was going to take a team, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I thought that it was going to be BYU by any means, but it was going to take a team to rise above and to beat everybody else. And so, if that continues to happen, my biggest fear is that it will be BYU and they'll be the representative from the Big 12 and they'll get crushed in their first game. And then there goes the Big 12 and the CFP moves on without the Big 12. I there's a long way to go before that scenario has, a chance to happen. But I'd really like to see, honestly, I don't like Iowa State, but I think Iowa State's probably, from a talent perspective, the best team in the conference right now. I'd like to see them continue and be, in a position to where, because I think they could get into the 12-team playoff, and I think they could win a game or two.
I would ask, and I'm glad you brought that up because I was just going to ask you. See, I think that team is probably Kansas State, honestly, and I have not watched enough start to finish Iowa State. I actually like Iowa State. They've been a great bet all year, all year long. But I that's what I start to wonder about K-State, and it's what I hate about what happened in Provo. To me, I think K-State might be that team. And I think we saw some of that in Colorado there. That's a tough spot. There's going to be teams that go to Colorado and lose that you were like, oh man, I thought they would be better out there. K-State overcame a lot in that game, a lot of injuries. So did, Colorado had a lot of them too, but it was just a bloodbath there at one point. I think by the end of it, as Avery Johnson continues to develop, I think K-State will be the Big 12's best chance at a playoff win. I really do. And we'll see. And I'm not being fair to Iowa State, but I haven't seen Iowa State enough start to finish like we have a couple of the other teams, because they haven't played K-State or KU yet. And so we'll see them. They've certainly impressed, and they have that big win at Iowa, but it was a 1-point win. And other than that, 12-point win at West Virginia is easily their biggest win of the year to me, Tommy. That's their signature win. Beating Baylor at home, meh. They went to Houston, Arkansas State, North Dakota, and then they have that win at Iowa. They're going to get tested. They get to play Texas Tech. They get to play Cincinnati. They get to play Utah. They get to play K-State. Their big games are still coming on their schedule. So we'll learn about Iowa State. I think K-State's the team that has the best chance to win a playoff game.
Here's the only concern I have about Kansas State, and you actually alluded to this in the interview with Wyatt in the first hour. There's a chance. I don't know how likely it is, but there's a chance that you could have a letdown game this weekend if the Wildcats are not careful going to Morgantown. Because, let's just call it for what it is. You go to Boulder and you take on the, big time show that is Colorado football with all the glitz and the glamour and all of that.
And that quarterback.
And that quarterback, that coach, all the talent, all of that. That's not only physically exhausting, that's mentally and emotionally exhausting. Like the leading up to the game, the preparation for it, the 60 minutes of football, and then you turn around and you go to the other side of the country. And it's back-to-back road games. It could be really easy, and I'm not suggesting that Kansas State is in this boat, but it would be really easy for a lot of teams to get up for Colorado, be focused on that, and then not get up for West Virginia on Saturday. Like that is a trap that a lot of teams have fallen into. I think that I will say I give Chris Klieman a lot of credit and his staff, because I think that they will do everything in their power to avoid that. And you better believe that they're going to get their guys as prepared as possible to try to avoid a letdown game. West Virginia is a good team, and they're a team that they were, I think, probably underestimated going into this season for sure. And here they are, where they're kind of just sitting in wait. Like you mentioned, I think before, like they're a little pissed off that they lost to Iowa State, and so like it's got all the makings of a letdown game for the Wildcats. If they can get through this game at Morgantown, this weekend, then at that point, yeah, like I'm ready to have a conversation about them being the Big 12 team, a Big 12 team in the CFP.
Again, their path to get there is really difficult. I just think if they get there, they'd be the team most likely to win a game. You can add up 1,000 reasons why this is just such a nightmare portion of the schedule. It's back-to-back road games. It's back-to-back, you know, the longest trips you'll make all year long. West Virginia is on the second half of back-to-back home games, coming off of a loss they're upset about. Like, and oh, by the way, Kansas looms next week. Like, there's a 1,000 different reasons why distractions could be in play, fatigue could be in play. Oh, and by the way, Avery Johnson did have to leave that game. And oh, by the way, they had what, their top two corners and a safety leave that game. So it's just all, and you don't have any time to recover normal, like you normally would. So this, I would suspect, and I haven't seen, let's see if we can find the early line on that game. Because it is not one that I am particularly excited to like bet, for instance, because it feels like it's going to be really, really, really difficult to go out there and perform well. To me, it becomes more about going out there and surviving. Can you go out there and just get through it? West Virginia right now is a 3-point dog. K-State's a 3-point favorite. The over-under is 54.5. I'd probably take the under. And I don't know that I'd lay the 3.
I don't think I'm going to lay the 3.
I think I'd go money line at that point. Because I do think K-State can win, and I think they should win. But it just feels like an ugly kind of game brewing, and they have to be able to take care of business there. And look, people are going to see that nationally, especially now that West Virginia just lost a game. And they'll be like, see, K-State's not that good. They barely got through a game in Morgantown. But that, we know that's not the reality of what looms this week. It's a survival game. They just have to survive Morgantown. They do. They got a chance to really open people's eyes last week at Colorado. Now you got to go the other direction and just survive. We'll have much more on that game. It's in the national spotlight. You go, Avery Johnson. Go show everybody why everybody's so excited. Shoulder the load. Put it on your back and let's go. We'll have much more on that game throughout the week. Monday Night Football, Tommy. You know, before the year started, we probably looked at this, and at least I did, and was pretty excited about it, right? The Jets finally get Aaron Rodgers. The Bills are the Bills. They've got Josh Allen. They've got all these things. It's exciting for a very different reason tonight. You've got the, you know, you've got the train wreck happening sort of with the Jets. Their season is far from over, I would say, but they finally make some changes offensively, get Nathaniel Hackett out. If you were the play caller for the Jets, Tommy, where would you start things? Like it to me is just so screamingly obnoxious for the last few years. Like, we all watch football. We all know how this goes. How would you start the game plan if you were the Jets?
You remember the scene from The Blind Side where Sandra Bullock's character is in the stands and she's like yelling at the coach and she's like, run the dang ball. Like, that's, I mean, come on. Like, that's all the Jets need to do is lean on your two studs that you've got at running back. Like, that's where it needs to start and end with the Jets.
So the last two games, okay, so they go two games against the Titans and the Patriots where Breece Hall carries the ball 14 and 16 times. Okay, they win those games. Then they come and they play Denver and Minnesota. The scores, the Denver game was 10-9. The Minnesota game was 23-17. Close games, right? Low-scoring games. Breece Hall touches the ball 10 times and then 9 times. They're not even throwing to him in those games. I mean, it's absurd.
Add on top of that Denver game, I don't know if you remember it, it was pouring down rain the entire time. Like, you know, so it's going to be hard to hold on to the ball regardless, but that should even lean more into running the football.
I'm not sure there's a better game breaker in the NFL either than Breece Hall to break one off.
Yeah.
And for an offense that's challenged to score, there are chances in his opportunities because he busts one off better than anybody. And yeah, you also have the guy you drafted, Braylon Allen, who's pretty good.
He's been pretty good this year.
He's been really good. He's got juice. And I don't like that because I want Breece to hog all the carries because he's from Wichita and we love Breece Hall. But Braylon Allen looks pretty good too. We'll see. I think that Woody Johnson did a very smart thing because whatever the reason Nathaniel Hackett is calling the plays needs to be done.
He's done.
I know he is now. I know he is now. But it took firing Robert Saleh to get it there. Right. So I think that, as much as anything, is would be a hopeful reason for Jets fans. This game, Tommy, is a 1-point spread. That seems absurd. I don't know how much public money. I would bet you there's more public money going to the Bills tonight than any other game this year, at least in the primetime games. And I'm a sucker for it too. I'm gonna pick the Bills to win.
It's taken everything in me to not empty my bank account on Buffalo, just because of what has happened with the Jets. And like Jeff Ulbrich is the interim head coach for the Jets. Let's be real. Aaron Rodgers is the interim head coach for the Jets for the remainder of the season. What's surprising to me with all of that is clearly, and we all know about the longtime relationship that Rodgers has with Nathaniel Hackett. I was shocked that they fired Robert Saleh and didn't make Nathaniel Hackett the interim head coach because of the relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Like, that does tell me that Woody Johnson at least still is independent enough and outside of the orbit of Rodgers enough to not kowtow to that. Because let's be honest, like, I guarantee you that's the first thing Rodgers said.
I don't think that Rodgers went to Woody Johnson and said, you need to fire Robert Saleh.
But I'm sure that when they had the conversation about who the interim was going to be, I guarantee Rodgers was like, it's got to be Hackett.
I don't think Woody Johnson had that conversation with him either. But I do think Woody Johnson's a smart enough guy to be a billionaire to see that it wasn't going to work with Saleh and Rodgers. And so he made the decision, right? Like that. And again, I applaud him because, unlike Dallas, where it's clearly not going anywhere positive, he was willing to try something to salvage it when you've gone all in on Aaron Rodgers, like the Cowboys have gone all in on Dak Prescott. So we'll see how it works. But yeah, I expect a lot of running back action tonight on both sides of the ball. That's how I'm betting. I'm betting the running backs in the game. All right, we'll come back. We'll tell you what else is on the network and where you can find it next on Sports Daily.